sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
And we got, apparently, a special guest, which I found out about 3 seconds before I jumped on the old podcast.
There's something broken in the old system going on right now, because you clearly got an email. I can see it in my calendar. You got an email invite. And I don't know technology. I don't know how these things work. That's what we have Brooks for. But the guest that we have is actually a very well-known to me, and I was actually surprised that we've not had him on the podcast. And when I checked with Brooks, he said, you know, we've had him in workshops, we've had him at Exponential, but we have never had him on the Church Planning Podcast. And I feel like that's a sin against all of our listeners. I feel we need to ask forgiveness. I actually believe Joshua Brown is the most interesting man in church planning today. And that's just to give reference to the most interesting man in the world. You know, those commercials. I don't plant churches often, my friends, but when I do, stay thirsty. So Joshua Brown, welcome.
This is the strangest show I've ever been on before.
Yes, welcome. We've been expecting you.
Peyton, thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast. Pete, it's a pleasure to meet you. And for our listeners today, do hang around. Despite the introduction, I will add as much value to what you're doing for the kingdom of God as I possibly can.
This definitely is the weirdest church planning show I think you've been on. When we have a history on this show. We once had Philip Yancey on, and I think we freaked him the heck out. You know, I came in a little bit late, and Pete was on with him, and I went wow, like I was on some Space Marine dropship, and he's like, hello, am I in the right place? So we freaked him out and made him angry a couple times.
That's because back in the day we were recording on a conference line, like there wasn't Zoom back then.
No, and we would show up sometimes, Joshua, and we'd have like guests coming on, and Pete and I would be messing around with Google Hangout, back in the Google Hangout phase, putting hats and glasses on ourselves.
Little
and
cigars hanging out the mouth.
It was ridiculous. Our great guests would pop on, and then
we try and do it the whole thing. Like a cigar hanging out our mouth, and we're talking theological questions with them. It was great.
Yeah, and then we had Ed Stetzer. His comment was classic. At the end of it, he goes, so are you guys just two guys kicking back beers in mom's basement? So that was, and it was a mark of honor for us. We're like, this is great. But, you know, we're still the biggest longing running church planning show out there. So we screw around a lot, and we talk about God, though, quite a bit. And it's a good blend. But I want to quick introduce Joshua Brown. He is known as the pressure washing pastor. I met him in a masterclass. I don't know if you could call it a masterclass group, but Todd Wilson, the co-founder of Exponential, he gathered together leaders that he could see on the horizon as being people that could really move the needle forward. And I remember turning up at a dinner where we all met. I think it was Franklin, Tennessee. And Joshua kind of, he stumbled in like, I remember your first words to me were something to the effect of, I don't know if I'm in the right place. And you didn't mean the right restaurant. You just were kind of like, I don't really know why I'm here. And almost immediately, I thought to myself, I don't know if I'm here to meet anyone else, but I think I'm here to meet this dude. And everybody in the group was amazing and incredible. We sat, I think at the end of that weekend, I made a statement. We're all sitting around this room, and I And I just said, because the camaraderie and the interaction in this group was fantastic, stellar. But I remember looking across the room and pointing at Joshua and saying, I think, and these were high capacity leaders, like really amazing dudes. But I remember saying, I think Joshua Brown is probably the most interesting man in this room. And part of that, you know, we're going to hear your story and unpack that a bit. So I'm not going to say any more, but I'm going to hand over to Pete, who's got a question for you.
Well, one of the first questions I always like to start with, Josh, is, should I call you Joshua? Because this is how...
Joshua, yes.
This is how Peyton got in trouble with Philip Yancey. He kept calling him Phil, and Philip kept going, it's Philip, it's Philip. It was so funny.
But I feel like we're friends now, Phil. You know, we can talk, but no.
Thank you.
Is it Joshua or does it matter to you, or
it's Joshua?
It's yeah. Joshua.
Yeah.
In my drug dealing days, it would be like the Brizzle, but now nice. Now I go by the name that my mom gave me, and it was Joshua.
All right, cool. All right, I won't remember that whatsoever. You're going to be my Philip Yancey, but here we go. Here's a question I always like to start with. Tell us your story of how you came to faith.
My mom was beat up by a dude named Doug, and she went to the hospital, and I was stayed at home with him. And he did things to me that once my mom got back, I told her that we had to go. So we went down to Alabama, found a church, slept in a car at that church. Since God saying, I need to be forgiven of my sins, whatever that looks like. I was 6, 7 years old, somewhere around there, and went forward and felt delivered. I don't know what that means outside for a 6-year-old, but I felt like spirits left me and a spirit came into me. And I felt light as a feather. It was a normal Baptist church, not a Pentecostal church. And I would mark the saving grace of God at 6 years old in that church that let us live inside their fellowship hall for several months. So that's how I come to faith.
No, that's great. I mean, that shifts gears for us suddenly, right? Like Pete and I are used to screwing around a little bit at the beginning, but no, we can't do that now. But, you know, Joshua, first off, thanks for sharing that, because that's vulnerable. But I know also that you have such a heart for men in particular, men who didn't grow up with dads. In fact, you run the Dudes Without Dads podcast, which we'll talk about. We'll come back to that. But I mean, I think your vulnerability and just your honesty about that is such a pathway for people to find their way into the arms of Jesus and on the road to healing for that. Like, and that is so important. So just, you know, thank you for even opening up and going deep with us. So from there, man, like, how did your story start to form? Because again, like, your story has twists and turns, brother. And, you know, tell us a little bit more about how you ended up where you are now.
Well, just to give a little bit more backstory, my mom was 15 years old when she got pregnant with me, and my dad was 21, and he offered to pay for my abortion, not being my life. And that put us on the streets of Nashville, Tennessee. And she was a young mama with a little baby boy, and just churches and different dudes that she could live with, gave us an opportunity to live in different places. But as a dude without a dad, I was always searching for identity in something other or in something. And the only thing that I could find identity in was probably musicians and actors, you know, so you name, you know, whether it's Rocky or whether it was, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger when he played inside the Predator, dudes with big arms. It's like that must be what a man looks like. And from Tupac Shakur to Henry and Goodfellas, all these different men is what I identified as being like, that must be what a man looks like, because I didn't have any frameworks to work from. And so From there, became a drug dealer, pothead, high school dropout, despite the fact that I would say the creator of the universe encountered me, saved me at 6, 7 years old. I didn't become entirely sanctified, as some of our, you know, theologian friends would use those terminologies. I was still lacking identity inside of what it looked like to be a godly man, husband, and father. So long story short, I got in a bad car wreck, showed up at the last night of a revival service, and at that revival service is when everything began as it relates to this search for identity inside the Heavenly Father. I sat back, had weed with me, had my girlfriend with me. I was 20 years old, and I have no clue what the pastor was saying, but I'd heard God speak to me and say, "Joshua, I love you." And for a dude that never had a dad, hearing those words again, I was like, "I need my father." So I went forward, gave the pastor my pot, God my heart. And that was September 27th, 1997. And from there, got a GED, pastoral ministries degree, Christian counseling, served in the church for over 22 years, got burnout on growing programs, events, tithing, whatever, you know, small groups, relational environments to keep people connected, but never matured. I just got burnout. And ended up doing what any person that's burnt out that thought that you can only be a pastor inside the four walls of a church. I Googled top 5 businesses to start for 5K or less because that's all I had, or at least all I could borrow from PayPal. And I should have started taking pictures of cats that day. I know, Peyton, you appreciate that I didn't. And pressure washing was on the board. Started a little pressure washing business while I was full-time on staff, 4 kids. 150 volunteers, campus ministry, family pastor, First Impressions. And year one, we did 250,000, year two, 443, year three, 700, year four, over $900,000 worth of side hustle money in this pressure washing arena. And I started to grow in love with what I now know is marketplace ministry, but I didn't have the context or the verbiage. And so when we met at Exponential, or we met at with the Multiplier Group, the vocabulary of language that I utilize today was not in function or in operation. It was still in formation. And so from there, I ended up realizing that ministry in the marketplace was a great place to evangelize and to disciple. And so for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I've been utilizing ministry inside the marketplace through pressure washing. We now have video courses, boot camps, help church planning, co-vocational, disciple-making networks, use pressure washing for a form of mobilizing, galvanizing their efforts. And so if you're listening to this and you're wanting to stick to the end, just remember pressurewashingpastor.com if you're wanting to start or find out more information about starting your own pressure washing business so you can be a minister in the marketplace. So anyway, I said a little bit. Do you want to dive into any of that?
So, well, first of all, tell everybody, because I'm really curious about this, when you started, were you located? Like, where in the country were you?
Nashville, Tennessee.
And are you still there now?
Mm-hmm. So Arrested Development had it right as far as a vision to go to Tennessee. No, I guess y'all haven't listened.
No, I remember back in the day.
To another. Okay, so I'm still in Nashville, close to Spring Hill, where they ended up transitioning to.
Okay, all right, cool. So you Googled it, you found out, hey, you could start this pressure washing business. Tell everyone, what does a pressure washing business in Nashville actually look like? And the reason why I asked that is I've got a buddy who had a pressure washing business in Florida, and he's pretty much retired now. But I remember because he and I would talk all the time. In fact, we had a podcast together for, you know, probably a couple of years. And one of the things that I found interesting is someone who lived most of my life in California, like there were completely different issues that he ran into. Like in his case, a big deal is mold on the roofs, and like HOAs will be like, you got to get that pressure washed off. And like, that was the bread and butter of his business. So I'm kind of curious, how does it look in Nashville? Is that like, you know, like who's actually reaching out for pressure washing? What does that business actually look like? What's the need that people are looking to get filled?
Well, for our listeners, and I appreciate you asking, I'll get into services and operation in 1 second, but when you ask the question, you have to start with a mindset question as far as what business are you really involved in. And so anybody that's listening that's thinking about pressure washing, you know, if you ask Chick-fil-A what type of business or what it looks like, they're not going to tell you we're trying to make the best chicken sandwich on the planet. They say we're in the, do you know the answer?
I don't.
The answer is they're not in the chicken business. They're in the people business. And so anybody that's processing pressure washing, you first have to change the way you think in order to really process this conversation properly, because it's not a pressure washing business. It is a tool to call, train, and send everyday disciples into the marketplace. And so when we get into mission, vision, values, and goals of our company, it ain't got nothing to do with pressure washing. Yes, we want to create jobs, make disciples, serve the city. Yes, we want to win 5-star reviews. Yes, we want to set the standard on every job. But more importantly, we want to call young people, we want to train them, and we want to send them to be disciples inside the marketplace. That's the business we're in. So I don't want anybody that is listening to think you need to learn operation and services. You first have to identify what kind of business are you in, and we're in the kingdom of God business. We're in the mission of the kingdom business. And so as far as services operation, we do residential. We've done over $10 million worth of work over the last 9 years. We do Christmas lights. We do soft washing roofs. We do house wash and commercial and ceiling driveways. And, you know, so exterior residential commercial cleaning services through high pressure or soft washing systems.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the cool things, Joshua, about your story, and I remember you, you know, kind of talking about this. I mean, one thing that might be interesting for people to know is Brown's Pressure Washing is a multi-million-dollar business, and it didn't start that way. I mean, you were working at a church, not able to make ends meet, so to speak. Can you go back into those early days and, you know, kind of what that was like? Like you're working at the church and you're like, man, I'm just not making it. I need a side hustle. And how that became, and this is what I want our our listeners to know, is that when you left full-time vocational ministry, I know this because I know you and I are friends. Like we know each other outside of just, you're just a guest on my podcast. But you really went into ministry in a big way you never have. Like what you just touched on, like I know story after story about Brown's pressure washing out in the community, to the point where what you just said, you're so protective over, like the brand, because what it means when someone hears Brown's pressure washing, like that's a degree of service that they're going to get that reflects Christ. Like there's so much in here that I know we're just scratching the surface of, but go back to the beginning of the story and tell us about, you know, what that, like back when you're like, I just got this little rig that I bought for this a couple $100. Like walk us through that. Cause I know for our church planners hearing this, they're going to be like, man, I could do something like this, because close to my heart, when I first intentionally planted, Joshua, I was a window cleaner. And it wasn't that much different than being a pressure washer, because I was knocking on, I was getting to know every single homeowner in my community, because I was knocking on the door, drumming up business.
You know how we all have different personality profiles. And so for our listeners that are processing, it's helpful to know who you are. And so when I started it with this idea of I'm going to grow a team. You know, or, you know, I'm not going to do it by myself. And so I always cast vision and then I lead culture and I try to put people in proper positions. And so when you work a full-time job at a church and have 4 kids and a wife, you have to be very wise with your time. And so I started out because I have very low, what's it mean when you say that that guy doesn't have a risk barometer?
Means you end up in the ER a lot. And so do I.
Yeah. So risk is not something I think highly on. I have a high level of just trust and like, hey, I can make this happen. And I think from a childhood perspective, growing through trauma, you just realize you can do anything in any situation. And so there's always a way to solve a problem. And so I started by building a small little trailer, took out a couple of PayPal loans. I didn't have the cash in hand. And that little trailer, year one, made, you know, $225,000.
Wow.
And the way it worked is I just learned from other people. I had a mentor that was in Raleigh, North Carolina, who I could call and ask questions to. And they, you know, Keith helped answer those questions. And so if I went back to the early days and said what made it successful, it was spending time with Jesus before my team members came over. And I would then share with them whatever I was going through inside my prayer time. You know, if you read, reflect, record, and respond, whatever your practices are as far as inductive Bible study, I just basically shared my devotions with the team that came over to work for the day or the person that came to work for the day, because I wasn't doing the jobs. I was providing jobs for, you know, high school, college kids in our community, and then they would go off and do the work. And so I don't know if there's more that you need to unpack it, but I'd say the spending time with Jesus and then spending time with your team, and then when they're able to spend time with you, so like I would take them on jobs on the evening or on my day off or on Saturday. And, you know, if you think about how much time the average person that goes to church spends with their pastor outside of the Sunday morning service, it's probably nil. But because I got to spend day in, day out time, plus they were coming over to my house, they were part of our families, we would do dinners together, they become in proximity of me, or they become wherever I was, they were able to become like, because they spent enough time with me to represent me wherever I wasn't. Mm. And so you think about mobilizing. You either mobilize somebody else's formation or you mobilize your formation by spending time with that individual, and then you send them off. And so let me put a bow on it like this. We hired, I don't know, 5 new team members earlier this year. One thing that we do is we have boot camps where other individuals who desire to start pressure washing companies, they come in and they experience a boot camp, or they get training on how to do all of our services and marketing and sales. Well, they get to go with one of our technicians. So in March, we hired some new technicians. And on week one, one of the kids named Demetrius, who's 21, he washes a widow's house, which we wash widow's homes in Nashville for free. He ends up asking the widow, as those other individuals who are out of town to learn pressure washing, watch him ask the widow, "Hey, Mrs. Jones, your house is done, da-da-da-da-da. Is there anything I can pray for you today about?" And then he spends 10, 15 minutes praying over her, all while these out-of-towners are not there necessarily for ministry. But Jesus said, "You shall receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world." Pressure washing gives you the ability to pray over people, to serve people, to witness to individuals, to share your testimony. You know, if you go to a lunch and learn, every time I went to a lunch and learn, are you familiar with what that is? A lunch and learn is where for some Panera bread, orange juice, and some chocolate milk, you can talk to some real estate agents at Keller Williams, or you name the real estate agency. While you're there, instead of talking about pressure washing, you share your testimony and you just set it up. And so I started the business on the foundation of what it looked like to be transparent. At the beginning of this show, you asked me about my salvation story. The same person that y'all saw today is the same person back then. So I've just tried to be transparent, and that has a way of rubbing off on the people that you hire, and then the people that you train, and the people that you send. Does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah. In fact, one of the first questions that I've got is, if you're taking people that are high schoolers, you know, people who want to start businesses, all that kind of stuff, right? Usually younger people don't have as much experience in probably what you're doing at all. How do you train them? Like, what does training look like when you're taking someone who doesn't have any experience, maybe really hasn't had a job much, like how do you transfer? Because you've got more than just like the technical, here's how you do the job. Like your business model is about the people. So how are you training them on that?
Do you remember what I did for 22 years before opening a, before leaving it? I was in youth ministry, student ministries. And so I think adults maybe don't look at teenagers the same way that I look at teenagers. I look at them as competent young people who just need somebody to spend time with them and then show them how to do a skill. And so I think 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 20-year-olds have a lot of capacity, and they're not all immature playing video games. There's actually some that have good character. And Truett Cathy wrote a book, it's easier to build boys than mend men. And so I carry that. I'd rather hire somebody with good culture and train them the competencies than to find some old jerk who's been doing things a certain way. And they might know how to do the skill, but they don't know how to love people in front of people. And so for me, it was always character over competencies. And if I spend time with them, I can train them how to turn on a pressure washer and how to walk a surface cleaner, how to do a soft wash. It's just time. And kids have the ability to do great things. They win gold medals at the Olympics. And so we shouldn't be sleeping on our high school, middle school students, which I didn't use middle schoolers, but they're amazing. If you look at what they're doing in sports, they're outperforming, you know, old people, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway. Right.
And see, I understand that, but my question is more like, how do you do the training? Is it all like walking with them?
Yes.
And showing it? And, you know, is that the model of how you're training?
Yeah. So I'll go through the way. So if I was with Peyton right now, there's things that Peyton knows how to do that I just simply don't know how to do. And so the first thing I'd ask Peyton to do is, Peyton, do you dance?
No.
I don't either. Pete, do you dance?
Oh yeah. He's got some moves.
You got it, baby.
You can do more than the jump around dance.
That's the extent of it right there. That's it.
Don't believe him.
All right.
That man can cut a rug.
So just simply for anybody that's watching, or if we could create a nice doodle over this thing, it's the first thing you do when you train somebody is you watch, I do. And so I just want you to watch me while I do. And then afterwards we're gonna talk. What'd you see me do? Why did I do that? Anything else you saw me do? So after you have them watch and you do for a while, maybe a day or two, then the next day you watch. I mean, I do and you help. And then you talk. Hey, did you understand why I did this? Do you understand why this door right here doesn't need to have SH on it, sodium hypochlorite? What would happen, do you think, if we would have, you know, put that on that bush? Why did we pre-soak the bushes? And then we talk. And then the next time they do, I help, we talk. Same process, then it's they do, I watch, we talk. And then the fifth process is they do and somebody else watches. And you just got to a multiplication way of reproducing yourself in anything on this planet. And so it's five steps to multiplication. Any church planner that has been trained by a church planning organization, if they haven't been taught that, they have not been taught properly on how to reproduce leaders, and then you're stuck doing everything yourself.
It's so funny that you say this because, you know, having, as you know, just spent a year on discipleship, cha-ching. That's the rule. We have to say cha-ching if we cha-ching. Say our books. But that, you know,
I don't ever have to say cha-ching because I don't have any books. So, you know, I'm safe.
It's not true.
Might but, have nothing to do with church planning. It's never going to be brought up on this podcast.
So, you know, basically that whole idea, though, of everything Jesus did. I mean, that really is that first year of just spending time. It was just watch me. Second year teaching. He kind of shows them the active ministry now, but the principles behind it, like you said, that conversation piece. And then lastly, at third year, the tactics do. And I'm going to send you out and you're going to come back and we're going to debrief. And that whole thing, like you said, like I actually wish that I had done this podcast before because I would have quoted like that would have ended up in the book as a real life example. But if, you know, during when you were talking earlier, I went to brownspressurewashing.org right on the page, like it says at the top, it says number one rated pressure washing business in Nashville. And then when you go to the comments, I mean, they're as recent as like 18. Actually, they're still coming in when I'm on there right now. They're updating. But when I went on there, like the first one was like 18 hours ago. There's one from Thanksgiving where they're like, yeah, you know, they came out on Thanksgiving. But the consistent review is these people do what they say. You know, they did exactly what they said. They keep their word. Like, there's an integrity that's coming through on these reviews that really goes to the disciple making question. And something I know just from knowing you and hearing you talk about it multiple times, that you really are in the people business, that Brown's Pressure Washing has like this standard that you want. You know, it's what it through the word we call the 90, 99 and 1. Like when we get one comment of someone being really upset about something that writes in, we don't say, well, they're just one. You know, we've got millions of people listening. We literally stop what we're doing and we address that one who's struggling. And it's that kind of philosophy, I think, like when I see the success that Brown's has, you're taking Jesus's principles, you're applying them to a business. You are the pressure washing pastor. Like, you took these ministry principles of Jesus and baked them into a business that's, you know, flipping profit, but also you're franchising out disciple makers. I know the reality is, Joshua, you know, you've got this, it is multiplication. I don't know if you guys are still doing the franchise or not, but at a point you were multiplying even what you were doing outward. So can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, so for me, there's multiple ways of multiplying. And have you ever spent time in prayer and just got the sense that you're supposed to do one thing and not another, kind of like the Matrix? Mm-hmm. I really believe that the Brown's Pressure Washing brand is meant for a church planting movement. And so I purposely have been very slow. And in fact, I don't even want to, I don't want to let people become a Browns. I'd rather help people open up their own brand. And I'm really praying and believing that and waiting, not patiently, for a church planting disciple making org that has a marketplace ministry mindset to take my brand and let's grow out Browns. Because it is from LLM. Are you familiar with LLMs?
Learning language
models. Yeah, with ChatGPT, with God has shown a ton of favor. I had a YouTube channel come and do a big story on us. And so as a result, the Browns brand has Chick-fil-A branding abilities. And then I have brand ambassador relationships where by being a Browns, it lowers your cogs in these different areas of marketing, CRM. They're basically giving me certain free things just to talk about them on YouTube. And I'm like, if the right org that has young people that believes in mobilizing in the marketplace wants to plant churches, make disciples, the Browns brand is waiting for them. And so I'm kind of just waiting. And so it's over here. I've got a coaching community. So if somebody's wanting to start or scale, I can help them start and scale their own. Homeschool families are phenomenal at this. But the Browns brand is licensing. It's connected to my nonprofit. It's all inside of chapters. The whole thing is set up for kingdom-minded organization that wants to partner. So that's something I've just been waiting and in conversations with, and we'll see what God wants to do with it. So I've kind of put it on the back burner, not aggressively searching, waiting for God to send somebody, an organization.
That's good. Well, what would a church planter who, you know, let's say they're listening today and they're like, man, you know, Joshua, that's amazing. I love what you're saying. Love what you're doing. I think I could do this. And I think, you know, I probably need to do something like this. Maybe it's not pressure washing, maybe, but maybe today somebody's heard this and they think this is maybe what I need or what I'm missing, and they've been sparked. If they were to follow in your footsteps and start taking those steps of, hey, you know, just a simple rig, because I know you have a whole system for people to get started. What could they expect? What does that look like? Kind of walk them through what would need to happen in stages.
So I have a 45-minute free webinar where we walk through 13 steps to start and scale a pressure washing business. So if anybody wants to legitimately learn all 13 steps, it's what I would do. If I have a 17-year-old, he'll be 18 in April. And if I was sending him to Carlsbad, California to start a pressure washing business, I've gone through and said, this is what I would do. I'd start with a market analysis. There's no way that I'm spending any money on a website or any video courses or coaching until I know my total addressable market. So I'm ordering a market analysis first. That's what I share on the webinar. And the next thing, if you got a good addressable market, let's put a business plan together. And so you end up going through all the different things. So if anybody wants to learn more about it, it all is on site of pressurewashingpastor.com. Just click, sign up for a free webinar, and then you and I will meet. You need about $10,000 or $15,000. You need about 10 or 15 hours a week, and you need the capacity to not quit for 3 years. There's so many dudes who come into it. They enjoy it at the beginning. It's almost like Jesus says, hey, come follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. And the next thing you know, they're like, hey, I didn't realize this was actually going to cost me anything. Guess what? The pressure washing or anything that you do, whether it's planning a church, starting a family, or working for somebody else, it costs you something. And so be willing to put in 3 years before you give up, because it takes 3 years almost to do anything to realize, okay, I'm not very good at this, but I'm not going to quit, and I'm not going to quit. And then you end up becoming the number one largest, longest lasting church planning podcast on the planet by just sticking in the game. And so don't quit. I've got an academy. You can walk with me for 12 months with other pressure washings. We're doing a couple of million here in Nashville. I can help you start up from your driveway to growing it to whatever your 10% of your addressable market might be.
It's good, Pete, from a business perspective. Any other questions burning or kicking around there?
Well, there's plenty.
We used to do the Bible Inner Circle, right? I mean, this was a passion of ours. And man, yeah, if we had met you years ago.
So we had a guy, in fact, ironically, I actually have a coaching call later today for a bunch of car detailers. And he got started in the car detailing business. And I think his story was like he bought a $5,000 trailer or something like that. And his first month, he made $5,500. So he was like in the black and day, you know, after the first month. And then, you know, now he's got like this, he's got the largest podcast for auto detailers. Turtle Wax will like sponsor him to like come to their trade booth at SEMA and all this other type of stuff. All because, you know, he took the chance and got into the car detailing business. And I remember Peyton and I were doing the Church Planner podcast, and he was part of our church plant. And he and I were talking one day, and it's like, yeah, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. What should I do it on? I'm like, dude, you're a detailer. Like, do it on detailing. Like, right there, you've already got it. You know what you're doing. And so it's just funny to watch, right, to see it go from, you know, him. I don't remember if he borrowed the money or what he did to get the trailer that started his business. But I've always thought the service businesses are the best businesses for the average person, because usually it takes the willingness to work, right? That's like the biggest thing that it takes. It's not usually your hard costs. Like, we make a joke all the time with our detailers. We're like, look, detailing a car is like $5 of hard costs. Like, that's it. So you're charging them, you know, $150, $250, just depends on what you're doing for your detail. That's all labor. And that is just being willing to show up and actually work and do the stuff. But the profit margins are great. So when you're self-employed, it's different than, you know, hey, I got to buy all this stuff and, you know, I'm making 10% on this. I mean, it's a totally different world when you're in the service-based business. So I personally love that industry for people to go into, because I think it is such a great way to make an income. And it's just really like you do is it's having a mentor, having someone who can walk people through the process, what they need to know. And because a lot of people, they need the handholding. I don't mean that in a negative way. They need to know someone's got my back and I can go to them with answers. Like every business I've ever done, I think that was always the thing that made it work for the people that I was training, was they knew they could come to me and I would have the answer for them. And if I didn't have it, I knew where I could go get the answer for them. It was like they just needed that assurance, because you feel like you're out there, you're in the marketplace. You don't want to look like a fool. You don't want to cheat people. You want to give them what they're looking for. And it's just having that mentor. So I love what you guys are doing. And I love the model. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, if you can love people and work hard, you got a great combo.
Mm, yeah. It's good. I like that. Well, hey, Josh, are there any kind of final thoughts that you have before we wrap up today? Mm.
I don't know. In this conversation, I just think about what our listeners might be thinking about. And so, you know, wherever you are today, I guess that's my main thought, is where the thoughts of our listeners might be. I want to encourage you to spend time with Jesus. You know, the desires of our heart are never more fulfilled than we're spending time with the God who created us. And so I just encourage all of our listeners. Mm. There's a God above who loves us dearly as his children. And spending time inside of that is the best place to be. And then from that, you have a responsibility to, you know, if you're a dude, to be a man, to protect, provide, to guide, and to lead. And whatever wrongs you've done wrong, you got a God who can redeem you. So make it right and then get back up and fight. Our lives are short. Mm. Might as well make an impact while you're still on this planet. And so I just want to encourage our listeners to, you know, stand firm, be on guard, act like men. And that's, I guess that would be my main encouragement today.
Good. And, you know, you've just launched a podcast which touches on many of those things, namely Dudes Without Dads podcast, which is a fantastic name for the podcast. I know that it's almost like giving two calls to action today. But if you guys want to hear an amazing podcast, he has gathered some of the most incredible men out there. It's, believe it or not, a lot of the leaders that we know and love and respect and look up to did not have fathers that were there for them. And so if you're out there today, chances are, you know, it's just weird when you haven't had a dad and you feel all strange and awkward and what have you. But it is very common, and it's extremely common for men that end up doing pretty significant things in their lives. I think in some ways, much of that is a quest for that significance that was missed it in childhood by not having a father. But you're really, I mean, it's always interesting to watch you, because, you know, something you guys should know about Joshua, he's, Brooks and I were laughing about, you know, kind of chatting through about you, that you're not the kind of guy who does anything halfway. Like, if you're going to do it, you're going to go all out and do it 100% to the best of your ability, whether it's from working out, Joshua is extremely fit, whether it's seeking Jesus, whether it's starting a business, whether it's ministry, there's not like a moderation switch in you. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it.
That's it.
And so I really want to give a shout out. We're actually going to get you back on to talk about that podcast. And I've actually been a guest on it already. So definitely check that out, Dudes Without Dads podcast. But Joshua, for today, where can people go to connect? You mentioned a webinar. And then what's the best place for them to just take the next step with you?
Yeah, I think sending me a text is probably the best thing. You know, I'm going to be more, it's a lot easier to respond through text. So 615-275-9554, that's my personal cell number. And so if you've got questions, just send text through there. I don't answer the phone a lot. I try to spend time with whoever I'm in front of. But I will respond to text when I'm not around people or doing something. So that's the best way to get to me. And then if you're serious about learning more about pressure washing, of course, pressurewashingpastor.com gets you on a free webinar. And then if you want to listen to Dudes Without Dads podcast, where you hear stories of dudes who grew up without a father, and then they come to meet their heavenly father. It's just, oh man, there's some just amazing testimonies. I'm excited to see what God does with it.
That's great. And if you guys text him so he knows where you got that number from, he knows what audience you're from, use the tagline Pizza Beast before you do it. Pizza Beast. And then he'll know, not Pizza Beast, like as in pizza, but, you know, like Pete is a beast, Pizza Beast. And then he'll know that you came from the Church Planter Podcast. So with that, we want to thank Joshua Brown on behalf of the Church Planter Podcast for coming, blessing you guys. I can't wait for you guys to get to know him more. You will certainly find, as I did in that room, not only was he the most interesting man in the room I was in, he's probably one of our most interesting guests. So with that, I want to say stay thirsty, my friends, and hand off to Pete so he can sign us out.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you got to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
Yoo-hoo.